And the wheel of fill-in hosts has landed on me for this beautiful Thursday morning. It is Andrew Bogish, as always, honored to fill in for Bill Ryder on Ryder Than You, right here on the Infinity Sports Network, on the Odyssey app, on SiriusXM, Channel 375. However you are listening, we love you for it. Thanks for being with us for these 2 hours. Phone lines out of the gate are open for you at 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. There are a few things to discuss on this fine Thursday morning, including MLB postseason, 4 games yesterday, 1 series of particular note ending. It's Thursday, we'll play Would You Rather. It's a day, we'll play Buy or Sell. We've got Shador Sanders and Joe Flacco and Thursday Night Football. We have the talented and handsome Evan Washburn on the show to kick off hour number two. He's working Browns and Steelers this weekend with Ian Eagle and J.J. Watt. I think the last time I was here, Evan was on the show. So I'm kind of like 2 for 2 or 2 for 3 with him over the last couple of sit-ins. So I'm glad to have him back here this morning on the show. But there is no other place to begin. As petty as I would normally be, and it's coming, sit tight, we have to begin with Chapel Bill and Bill Belichick at North Carolina. And last night ending with a joint statement from the head coach and the school with very big quotation marks on the graphic put out by North Carolina to tell you just how significant and meaningful and honest these statements were, from Bill saying, I'm still fully committed to here, and the school saying, we're still fully committed to Bill, after a day of just competing reports about how embarrassing it is inside the program, stuff that we can't see. On the field, we see the record, we see the lack of talent, we see the lack of preparation, we see other Power Four schools just wiping the turf with the Tar Heels. Do you remember that very first game? And I think the very first drive where they marched down the field, they scored points, we're looking in the luxury boxes, all the VIP guests are there. People are tweeting about, here comes Bill Belichick, the college football coach, all you NFL naysayers, you're in trouble, Mark, you know, eat your words. And you didn't even get to halftime before all of those receipts were being called to the forefront, because since then it's been basically a nosedive by North Carolina. Then you throw in all of the Jordan Hudson nonsense, all of this Patriot pettiness of whether or not scouts can come watch practice, and maybe you couldn't post videos of Drake May in a Patriot uniform doing things that look good for North Carolina football, but he's in the wrong uni, so you can't post highlights of him. But here's your Javonte Williams rushing touchdown from the Cowboys game earlier Sunday afternoon. So much embarrassment. But then yesterday was apparently the day that everybody began talking, and sources confirmed this and that, and we went rapid fire from different people, different organizations, hustling to tell us just how bad things are right now in North Carolina, that they had already, the powers that be, had been discussing an exit strategy. How do we get out of this now? How do we all save face? How do we, and from the school's perspective in particular, how do we save money? Because Bill's first 3 years are fully guaranteed $30 million. So he's going to want all of that, most of that. He could pay apparently a $1 million buyout to get out all of this and get away from all this embarrassment and shame and whatever, because there's no end in sight. And then the specifics of recruiting violations, and I understand everybody's going to roll their eyes over stuff like this, whether it is giving some families extra sideline passes or the players selling the free tickets that they get to every game. I know in the day and age of NIL and all this money floating around and players literally getting a paycheck, basically, that now they're in trouble for selling tickets. I get the disconnect, and it doesn't make sense, except for the fact that there still are rules. Like, it is not still a free-for-all. There are rules. They might not make sense. They may be inconsistent, but there are rules on paper, and no one's going to lose their job specifically over these things, but you might lose millions of dollars as the head coach if you're overseeing a program that is breaking whatever rules remain on the books down there, because North Carolina and donors and the school want to get away from this nonsense as fast as possible. We've been told now that staff members have already been asking their friends at better schools, at better teams who are going to play in the CFP in January, hey, do you think I could come hang out as like a consultant in January and make a check or two, because we're all going to be dead here soon in North Carolina? Apparently, you couldn't get Bill Belichick on the phone since last week because they're on a bye week now, and you couldn't track him down. Parents are upset. Other students are upset. There might have been a fight in the locker room on Tuesday. There certainly is some divide going on within the structure of this football program. All of that required a response from Belichick and from the school, and we got that last night. But let's just kind of go through all of this again, because I got to be honest, guys. Today is what, October 9th, 8th? What's the date? 9th? Sure. He's had the job for a handful of months. I don't remember what I said 3 days ago. I don't remember the specifics of my reaction to Bill Belichick and North Carolina when it came to projections. It was odd. It was sad that the NFL basically shunned him. I was surprised that he was doing this. I think I have still, I mean, my expectations would have been limited success. I don't know how much his shtick is going to sail in college football circles. I don't know how much kids who are 18, 19 year olds care about Bill Belichick or know about Bill Belichick to the point where they're going to go running to play for him at Chapel Hill. And the first wave of guys that went running there have really not been impressive at all. But I figured that these teams, this team that he coached, would be well-coached and prepared, that they might lose because of talent, but they weren't going to lose because of structure and game plan and professionalism, so to speak. And they lose for those reasons, too. It's not just about talent, but they're out there making mistakes, mental mistakes, avoidable mistakes. None of this has been good. But let's go all the way back to the very beginning of all of this. And this is Bill Belichick from his very opening press conference explaining to us why we shouldn't be surprised that he was finding his way back into college football.
I've always wanted to coach in football, coach in college football, and it just never really worked out. I had some good years in the NFL, so that was okay. But this is really kind of a dream come true. I grew up in college football with my dad. As a coach of Navy for 50 years, so as a kid, all I knew was college football, and so it's great to come back home to Carolina.
And now we fast forward to this week. This is WRAL-TV in Raleigh. About a minute, so sit tight and listen. This is all of the things that they can report that are going on around this program right now.
According to multiple sources, UNC has a divided locker room, a disorganized staff, and an overall failure to communicate. A divide is natural when you have Mack Brown-era players and the 70 new ones Belichick brought in. But according to sources, preferential treatment and a lack of leadership has added to the discontent. One source said they don't fault the players. They fault the leadership that created this toxic environment. There's an individualistic mindset. Here are the examples sources shared with us. Some players and their parents have better parking and stadium access on game days. Players who miss class and meetings aren't being held accountable. Players are selling their spare game tickets rather than sharing them with teammates. The non-travel roster players don't get to dress for home games, something you might see from an NFL practice player, but not in college football, adding to an overall lack of unity within the team. Parents say they have zero communication with coaches and were asked not to approach Bill Belichick, a stark contrast from the open-door approach of Mack Brown. One source said the lack of experience the coaches have is ridiculous. Belichick himself has been praised by multiple sources for his one-on-one coaching. It's his ability to run the program that's being questioned by parents and players. One source said, Bill shuts people out. He's limited in what he says.
Now, some of those things in there are kind of comical and not that important, but they paint and connect to the bigger picture of why this is not going to change. Because this is Bill Belichick. This isn't going to get better. Because I don't think kids are going to line up to play for him. And the thing that negated all of the negativity and the stuff that I didn't like and others didn't like about Bill Belichick and how he handled things when he was the head coach of the Patriots, those things get overshadowed when Tom Brady is winning 5, 6, 7, 11 Super Bowls. And that's not going to happen in North Carolina. They are not going to find the talent. They're not going to find the depth. They're not going to find, whether it's high school recruits or kids out of the portal, they're not going to find the roster or the rosters that are going to give them consistent elite success, which would negate what Bill Belichick is. And he's just a crusty old man. It worked. I didn't understand it. I didn't like it. It's not how I would run things if I was in charge. But all of the things that you remember about being dismissive to the media, sharing nothing, no personality, gruff, curt, mean, condescending, like, it, It's not my cup of tea, but it worked. It obviously worked. But when you take that to college, it's a different game. It does allow you to be the CEO figure he wants to be, where he runs the whole thing and he's picking the roster. Like that does play in general in college, because college coaches, even today with NIL, I mean, they are the brand. Nick Saban was the brand at Alabama. Dabo Swinney, for good or bad, is the brand at Clemson. When Harbaugh was at Michigan, he was the brand at Michigan. Ryan Day is the guy at Ohio State. No matter who his quarterback is, whether studs are playing defense or wide receiver, James Franklin at Penn State, like, it begins and ends with them. So that does play into Belichick's favor. But his apparent lack of willingness to just kind of be maybe nice is not good. And again, it sounds unimportant, but like, in college, you have to talk to parents. In college, you have to kind of stick around and listen to people. Like, it's part of that job. Tom Brady's parents weren't ever going to call Bill Belichick and complain about things in Foxborough. But whomever his quarterback is these days in Chapel Hill, that guy, that mom, they're going to want to talk about things. They're going to want Bill Belichick to pick up the phone and talk to them. And he's not going to change. This is not a learning curve. Some of these things you could chalk up to it's year one. It's going to get ugly. It's going to get sloppy as you're completely giving this program a facelift and making it be in your image. Some of that is true. Some of that is real. Some of that is fact. But the overriding thing is, this is how he's going to do it. And it's not going to fly. And it's why I think this does last this year. And then they just go, let's not make this any worse. Let's not set the school will not want to set anything back any farther. I don't think Bill wants to sit there and keep getting punched in the face by everybody. Because also, that's not going away. We've had conversations on the network on Maggie and Perloff this week about, you know, the legacy of Bill Belichick. This is the legacy of Bill Belichick, is ending with North Carolina. Other people have hung on, played or coached too long, had a lack of success at that very last stop. There's always the sad shots of Namath and Unitas, and you pick your favorite quarterback playing in a random uniform when he's way too old to still be out there. That's not this. This is a guy with enemies. This is a guy that's divisive. This is a guy who is at the center of one of the key historical conversations the NFL is going to have for my lifetime. I'm 45 years old. Hopefully, I'm barely halfway through my life. So in another 45 years, people are going, as long as Tom Brady's walking on this earth, people are going to talk about Brady and the Patriots and Belichick and who mattered more and who was the real this and who was the real that. And because of the way Bill Belichick handled himself in New England and made people just not want to support him, people are dying for ammunition to fire at him, to talk about Brady, to say it was about Brady, that Belichick was just there, obviously more than just along for the ride, but Brady was the thing that made the Patriots who they were. It wasn't 50-50. It wasn't 60-40. So people need this. They want this. This is absolutely about his legacy. And at some point, he's going to sense that, and he's going to want to pull the plug here and get out of this. And while I didn't think this was ever really going to work in North Carolina, that they were never going to be a perennial powerhouse, always in the CFP conversation, always running the ACC, or wherever they were going to play football moving forward, as however this plays out, I never thought the high end was possible. I don't think anybody did, that we'd get to hear this fast, that five games in and multiple beatings from other Power Four schools, that today the Jordan Hudson silliness doesn't even matter. It's almost an afterthought. Now we've got suspended coaches. We've got angry parents. We've possibly have fighting players. Did we have meetings this week about how much it's going to cost to get out of this and how much money can we save because of recruiting violations? Let's spin these that the program is out of control and there's no rules and there's no oversight and maybe save some money on the 20-plus mil that we have to pay him between now and two seasons from now. I can't believe we're here already. And I have zero confidence that we're going to get away from this. I mean, the dreaded vote of confidence came last night. This is not new. You never want your GM or your owner having to say you're still the guy for the job and they're behind you. That's the kiss of death. And it came in their first bye week, in the first half of October of his first year in charge. And I don't feel bad saying it. He deserves it. He made the bed. And now he's got to sleep in it. This is the way they wanted to do things. This is the way they had to do things. The smugness, the arrogance, the sad old man stuff with the 25-year-old girlfriend. I mean, just the laughing stock, getting smoked on the field, kissing on the sidelines, the stupid pictures that are both important and completely unimportant and none of our business. It's just, it's sad. It is disappointing. But something like this was inevitable, just not by October 8th / 9th. In year one of Bill Belichick's tenure, that may only be the lone year of his tenure at Chapel Hill. Much, much more on Bill and football, both college and the NFL this morning as we go to noon Eastern, as always, here on Writer Than You. When we come back, though, it is a national holiday. I apologize for not celebrating sooner, but we will do that after this on Writer Than You.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
Do you ever just decide you hate somebody for no reason?
Yes.
Okay.
That's it.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
The 1-2. Swing and a miss, strike three. Scream and flex from Hoffman. The Blue Jays are back in the ALCS for the first time since 2016. They down the Yankees in their own yard, and they're the first team in baseball's Final Four.
Isn't it wonderful? Isn't it just wonderful? Toronto, Canada, hockey, maple syrup, circular bacon. It all came to the rescue. It is Yankee Elimination Day. A phrase and celebration created by our one true savior, Christopher Mad Dog Russo. And it's a day that I have celebrated, thankfully, very often. And I am fully aware that this is petty and short-sighted. And I say our New York Mets, looking at Ryan Hickey, give us no foot to stand on in this conversation. But it is what it is, folks. All that matters is the New York Yankees cannot win the World Series. So thank you to Nate Lucas, to Trey Savage, to Vlad Guerrero Jr., to Ernie Clement, to anybody else in those blue and red and white Blue Jay uniforms who won twice in Toronto and then once in the Bronx last night to send the Yankees home and take that scourge off the table. Whatever they're up to, 26, 27, 28, I don't care. The number of World Series titles ain't changing for this October, and I love it. And I hope you do, too. You know who had fun last night? The Blue Jays manager, John Schneider. Let's go inside that celebratory clubhouse in the Bronx last night. Earmuffs if you need. There are bleeps, but there are still many naughty words. Deserved so. Let them ring true on this great Thursday morning. Here is Blue Jays skipper John Schneider.
Every single one of you, bullpen game, Nathan Lucas, Miles Straw, all you mother it takes everybody every day, start spreading the news.
Let's go. We're all Canadian this morning. Well, some of us at least. Vlad Guerrero Jr., one point last night, tears in his eyes on the field after this game ended and they advanced to the ALCS. Those were emotional tears. The tears in this clip that you can't see on the radio, I think, are from champagne burn. But here's Vladdy post-game from that same clubhouse with noted Yankee killer David Ortiz, plus Derek Jeter and A-Rod and Kevin Burkhardt on FS1.
Dale, the Yankee lose. The Yankee lose.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Oh, hey, let's do it again. The Yankees lose. The Yankees lose.
Yankee lose. Let's go, baby.
There's no need to stop. Just say it all day. And again, I get it. The Red Sox fans, you lost directly to the Yankees, but you get to celebrate today. If you're a Baltimore Oriole fan, you get to celebrate today. The Houston Astros, were they in the playoffs? You get to celebrate today. Anybody else that wants to celebrate, the day is yours because the Blue Jays did us the solid of taking Aaron Boone and Aaron Judge and all the smug Yankee fans that we work with on a daily basis. You don't know the mental and emotional fatigue that myself and Ryan Hickey and others have to do, have to sit here and go through on a daily basis while all these pompous Yankee fans walk around posting about Juan Soto and the Mets and this and that, and then they can't even get out of round two. On a somewhat objective front from here, the Yankees live in a space that George Steinbrenner couldn't fathom when he was still on this planet. This is an organization that has fallen into this weird complacency. They remain a very, very good baseball team. I guess they're elite in terms of their win totals and their payroll, obviously, and talent like Aaron Judge. There are some fair excuses this year. Gerrit Cole's Tommy John surgery, Clark Schmidt out of that rotation. So they had their issues to overcome. And they overcame them to win 94 games. They lost the AL East to Toronto on a tiebreaker. But once again, the Yankees don't really do anything. They made the World Series last year, and they were clearly the inferior team to the Dodgers. In seasons prior to that, they couldn't figure out the Red Sox or the Astros, but they always fell back on this, well, we got to here, we got to there, we did this, we did that. This weird sugarcoating, this weird acceptance. Maybe it was a coping mechanism, maybe it was just the way they go about their business now, but like just proud to be invited. Not really mad that they were not the best team on the field. And that's, I think, what the crux of this is for all of the money and all of the talent and all of the history, they're just another good baseball team right now. They are not the best. They don't... Upset sounds like the wrong word because they're not Cinderella. They're not nobody. They're not just getting in, happy to be there. And whatever happens, happens. They're supposed to make and they're supposed to win the American. They're supposed to be in the World Series. They're supposed to win World Series. But they can't. They pull off no surprises. And when they go nose to nose with a team that is in the same neighborhood as them, Toronto this year, Red Sox, Astros most notably recently, they can't win. They can't win. They can't beat the other guy that is their equal. They can fight off a pesky AL Central team all they want, the Twins, the Guardians, whatever, an AL West team that's broken and comes to New York and shivers and wets itself and can't win in the Bronx. But when they face a team that's kind of as good as them or has a little more fortitude, a little pluckier team, because the Blue Jays, while they do have some high-end talent, they were missing Bo Bichette in this series. They were missing Jose Berríos in this series. They still have Vladdy, but you know George Springer's not a truly elite player anymore. Like they did this with a lot of secondary players, also Rans, guys other teams didn't want. They paid a you know what ton of money to get Anthony Santander this year, and he misses 2/3 of the season because of an injury. Wasn't good before he got hurt. Wasn't good when he came back. So he doesn't even matter here as well. This is about grit and determination and the entirety of the roster depth that the Blue Jays get through. The Yankees just can't solve this. They just can't fight through the real hurdle. Sure, I'll win a wild card game, a wild card round. I might win a DS as well. But now when it's the final four, the final two, and we're kind of all on equal footing, they got nothing for year after year after year after year after year. They used to have A-Rod. He used to be on their team. He used to be on their side. He was not on Brian Cashman's side post-game last night.
Aaron's been very classy. We've all been very consistent with that. Honestly, from the entire organization, he's the one guy with circle that has least to be to blame. I mean, he's got a lot of talent, but for me personally, one of the worst construction of a roster I've ever seen. You have three left-handed catchers. You have five DHs. You have a first baseman in and out. It's just a very, very difficult hand for Boone. And honestly, they were exposed against a much better Jays team.
So Aaron Boone good, Brian Cashman bad. In Cashman's defense, he made moves during the season at the deadline to fix the roster that he initially built that wasn't perfect, had those injuries, needed adjustments, needed reinforcements, and he kind of got them. Now, Camilo Duvall was not good at all out of the bullpen. Bednar was bringing up Cam Schlittler. Like, there are positives for Brian Cashman, but it still is an odd roster. It still is not perfect. It still does not have the complementary pieces that, say, the Blue Jays roster does have. And it's just been too long for both of these men, Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman. Most other teams would be strongly considering right now a complete facelift. Just go, we've tried this long enough, and it's not working. We got to do something different because we're wasting Aaron Judge. We're wasting Gerrit Cole. Now we've got Max Fried. I don't want to waste him. We've got some young guys coming. I don't want to waste them. We need new voices. We need new ideas. We need new everything. And maybe there's a conversation like that in Hal Steinbrenner's universe this morning. But I don't think it's an honest one. I don't think it's a long-lasting one. And I don't think it's a conversation that ends with them actually making those changes. We're going to get to spring training, and the GM and the manager are still going to be there, and they're just going to do the same thing. They'll spend money this winter. They'll make trades this winter. We might like some of the moves. They feel shrewd. That guy, they need this. Maybe they'll stumble upon the right mix of people. I don't think so. This is the world now where they live in, where the GM makes his choices, makes his roster. The manager then goes and moves the chess pieces around. In New York, we sit here and go, maybe that was his idea. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe he's just following orders. Nobody knows who's really in charge, who to blame more so than the others. And then they're going to get to October. They're going to win a bunch of regular season games. They might have home field advantage, but they're going to find a team that isn't scared of them, that's just as talented as them, and they're going to lose again. And we're going to celebrate when they do. But for today, we'll celebrate now. Thank you one more time to the Blue Jays for closing out the Yankees. And best of luck moving forward, whether it's the Mariners or the Tigers. And then if it's the World Series, you will have our support for getting the Yankees off our hearts and minds this October here in the year of our Lord 2025. Would you rather? It's a Thursday. We will do that in just a second. But first things first, you need an update. Here's Gordon Damer.
Infinity Sports Network Sports Flash.
Andrew, this Sports Flash sponsored by Prize Picks. Football is heating up, and so is the hard-hitting action on Prize Picks. Download Prize Picks and use promo code PRIMETIME. Get $50 in bonus credit instantly when you play $5. Must be present in certain states. Visit prizepicks.com for restrictions and details. Well, Yankees might be gone, but the other three MLB playoff series still very much alive. Both NL Division Series with Game 4s today. First up, Phillies and Dodgers, Christopher Sanchez and Tyler Glasnow, the scheduled starters. What about Shohei Ohtani? 0 for 14 in the series, 7 Ks. What about it, Dave Roberts?
His decision-making hasn't been good. You can see, it's balls in off, and he's really not giving himself a chance to hit a mistake. I just think that he's in between a little bit, but the swing decisions are just not where they need to be right now.
Also, Game 4 between the Cubs and Brewers. The Brewers lead that series 2-1. Mariners-Tigers headed back to Seattle for Game 5 on Friday. NFL Week 6 kicks off tonight with the Giants and Eagles. Commanders wide receiver Terry McLaurin not looking good for his chances to play this week, that because of a quad injury. I'm Gordon Damer.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
The studies have been done, and people trust and value the intellectual perspectives of attractive people more than unattractive people, even though that has no bearing. That's why people believe me so often. See what I did there?
Sell. On the Infinity Sports Network.
Yeah, am I still eligible to sell that now? Very long after those words were said on their show. That, of course, is the handsome and talented Bill Ryder, who is off all this week. He's back here on Monday, as far as I know. I'm Andrew Bogish, in for today. You've had Jody Mack. You've had Sean Levine. Your week will finish where it began. Ryan Hickey, who's in charge of this show, will host it tomorrow. He's flexing now, much like Jeff Hoffman of the Blue Jays did last night after the final out at Yankee Stadium. Phone lines are open. We just got a tweet, Hickey, I don't know if you saw this, from Brad Wiemers saying, "This Yankee trolling elimination celebration is the content I didn't know I needed. Thank you for this ray of sunshine." This is what we're here for. This is what we are here for. whether it's tweets at Andrew Bogish, at Ryan underscore Hickey 3, or on the phone lines at 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. We'll play Would You Rather in just a second. Buy or sell next hour. We've got to get to the Browns QB depth chart, plus what I think is exactly what the Eagles need, a game tonight against the New York Giants. Plus, Evan Washburn will join us next hour as well. I want to go back to Bill Belichick for 1 second. And Hickey, I need your help here, because I remember when Bill Belichick took this job and we were confused. We were surprised that he was going to go, that at least for me, that there was literally nothing for him in the NFL. And that instead of just being on TV, whatever, that he had to coach so badly, he took the North Carolina job out of almost nowhere. And then shortly after he took that job, we got details of his buyout. And it was odd because the buyout was high for like 3 weeks, and then it would drop to $1 million basically when the season began, almost as if North Carolina was scared that somebody was going to poach him over the summer before he got onto campus and whatever. And I remember that being about, that conversation was always about the school perspective and the odd structure of it being 10 mil and then all of a sudden 1 mil after a short amount of time. And then yesterday, reading through all these reports that there's these conversations and they're wondering how to get out, and maybe Bill wants out or the school wants out or they both want out and this will be a mutual divorce. The buyout was presented from Belichick's perspective last night that he could now just pay $1 million to get out of this and forego the remaining money on his contract, which North Carolina would, I would think, would take in a second. If he shows up with a check and another scribbled "I resign as HC at UNC" note, they're going to go, all right, we'll see everybody later. But is this the same buyout, just explained differently, or did we have it wrong back in the spring? Like, this was hurting my head last night because I remember thinking, like, this doesn't make any sense why North Carolina would structure it this way. Because, first of all, an NFL team that wanted Bill Belichick in June would have written a $10 million check. And then when it drops to one, it's like you actually don't want to keep him anymore. Because usually the buyout is so high, it's because you don't want a guy to be plucked by somebody else. But it was almost inviting somebody to take him off their hands. And then it always felt like it was the school's prerogative. And then last night it was like, here's what Bill can do to get out of his contract. Maybe this is my brain just melting, but it felt like I had it wrong in the spring, that we were looking at it the wrong way. So I don't know if I was dumb then or dumb now is the question.
I don't think you were dumb either way, because it is like, well, it's bizarre in the sense of like July 1st, all of a sudden it's dropped. Like you said, no one on July 1st is hiring Bill Belichick to do anything in the NFL because it's right. Too late at that point.
Yeah.
So maybe it was just, I mean, I'm sure, right, UNC was the more, even though we looked at Bill from a desperation perspective, I would also probably believe that UNC was also pretty desperate to get Bill to come to campus, get some notoriety, get some attention. They got some big time, you know, they got the first preseason or the primetime game on that Monday night on Labor Day.
Yeah.
Attention that UNC football has never gotten before. So maybe it's to placate Bill. Hey, look, I know you're thinking about going to the NFL, so we're not going to stand in the way and basically lock you in. As you know, even before you coach your first game, we'll make the buyout drop to where if you do get an NFL opportunity, we're not going to hold you hostage. And maybe Bill was negotiating that to, like, because I think, right, isn't it fair to say he took this job with the sole intention to prove that he could still coach and get an NFL job again?
Yeah, and I know he said that wasn't the case, but that was the case.
Right. So yeah. Maybe he felt, okay, I need this job, but also at the same time, I need the buyout to be low to where if I want to leave, I have the freedom to do it. And that's why before I even coach a game, it's basically in coaching perspectives when it comes to buyouts. Pennies on the dollar.
All right. Well, I appreciate you saying that I wasn't dumb in either instance, although I still think one of them I was. But that being said, let's play Would You Rather.
It's time for Would You Rather on Writer Than You.
I was going to save this for last, folks. Let's actually start right now. Speaking of dumb, would you rather have Bill Belichick coach your college team or Urban Meyer coach your NFL team?
Oh, Lord. Somehow I'd still rather have Bill run my college program because there is a slim possibility that he stumbles upon the right combination of players to negate him, the way he runs things. But Urban Meyer has zero chance of NFL success. So I'll take Bill as the lesser of two evils.
And even though they're both laughing stocks, at least I wonder about Bill, you know, hiring a racist strength coach or skipping a team flight to go hang out with ladies that are...
Or putting his hands on players, possibly.
Right. Kicking a kicker,
yeah,
et cetera. Yeah. Urban had a hell of a few
that was something.
In Jackson.
That, and then that is the comparison to now.
Yeah.
Two guys just falling flat on their face in record time.
In record time is absolutely right. Oh, my goodness. All right, we talked about pain from a Yankees perspective earlier, celebrating their postseason exit. Let's look at pain from your perspective, Bogues. Would you rather, if we said no matter what happens here, your baseball team's eliminated, there's no option of winning, would you rather then have your team get swept and have it over quickly or lose in a hard-fought battle?
Oh, I'm good at making excuses. I'm not about accountability. Let's pass that buck. Let's blame something else. I need help to get out of a loss or a bad play, whatever. So if my team gets swept, I can just go, oh, we weren't good enough. And like try to protect my emotions. You're like, oh, you know, we're glad we were there, but they were better. We were never going to beat them. So the sweep to me is the easier out. If you lose a series to a team that you should beat or in a game that you should have won, that is going to, like the Mets as an example this year, not in the playoffs, but I think I would have preferred the Mets to have been 60-102 and just go, they're terrible, as opposed to having like 19 different games and situations that are just sitting in my gut right now, still driving me crazy.
Would you rather, speaking of stress, watch playoff baseball or playoff hockey? Only could choose one.
Yeah, this is a tough one. The tiebreaker here is baseball is my first love, and there's nothing like afternoon playoff games, the bunting, you know, the stuff, the red, white, and blue stuff on the stands, not actual bunting.
Oh,
although
I
bunting
thought you meant
can be
the actual skill.
Bunting can be fun sometimes
bunting
too.
That you don't really see in the regular.
No,
season.
It's like, you know, it's the atmosphere and the decorations, and it's a little chilly, and we've got turtlenecks on, and the pregame introductions like that. That's slightly better to me than watching playoff hockey.
Here in the Northeast, but I think this is the case throughout most of the country, it's been a pretty hot fall so far. Today's really the first day we're both wearing sweatshirts where kind of you get that cool fall crisp in the air. So would you rather have a hot fall or a cool spring?
I'll take hot fall because cool spring is disappointing. Like you're waiting for it to get warm, get out of winter, and then if it doesn't warm up fast enough, you're like, what's going on? Hot fall, though, you're like, it's still summer. I can still be outside. I got shorts on. I'm drinking beers. I'm drinking a pumpkin beer in the sun watching a football game in my shorts. Like, that feels okay. A cool spring is a little deflating because you want it to be warm. When it's not, you want Mother Nature to get her you-know-what in order.
So this week we saw a quarterback swap in the AFC North as Joe Flacco was traded from the Browns to the Bengals to replace Jake Browning and was announced to start this week against the Packers. So would you rather, Bogues, for your football team, have Joe Flacco or Jake Browning as your quarterback?
I think only the Browning family would choose Jake in this would you rather. Not that Joe Flacco is going to walk in and be elite, but Jake Browning was cooked. I mean, he's just not the thing. Flacco should be at least slightly better. And, you know, let's just say you had Jamar Chase on your fantasy team and you needed catches and yards and touchdowns. I think Joe Flacco gets you those more so than Mr. Browning does.
So this week in the NBA, it was revealed by ESPN that Giannis and the Knicks had some trade discussions that didn't really go anywhere. But it was reported that Giannis, if he was to leave Milwaukee, the place he'd want to go will be the Knicks. So would you rather, folks, for your basketball team, have Giannis or Luka Doncic on your team moving forward from this point on?
This one's oddly easy for me. I don't know if it should be, but I'd rather have Luka 11 times out of 10. My fear for Giannis is that it's just going to all go away. Like, Luka is in shape. I want to believe that he's going to stay in shape now. And I think there's more ways for Luka to be impactful longer term than Giannis. Maybe Giannis, no, I still think that Luka will have more of an impact this year. Giannis is the unique talent in 2025. But long term, I want Luka.
And let's finish with here, very important.
The most important.
The most important. We said the best for last. Paul Skeens revealed this week on social media that in his house, he has a hot dog roller. So, would you rather have a hot dog roller or a slushy machine in the Bogish household?
I assume everybody knows what Hickey's talking about. Like, he has the machine that you see in a convenience store just spinning hot rods, cooking a hot dog for you. There's, I think, a bun toaster warmer on the top. Now, also in this house is Livy Dunn, who is my 11-year-old son's favorite person on the earth right now. So there's a lot going on in Paul Skeens' house these days. There's a lot of pluses. The hot dog roller is a wonderful thing. Slushies are good, too. But the hot dog roller, that thing should be plugged in at all times and just rolling. So if you're hungry, you walk by, hot dog, away we go. That's the easy choice. Now, I don't know if you saw this, Hickey, but she, Livy Dunn, posted a video of him at the hot dog roller. And then I think put underneath it fart noises as this is this. And I think the caption was like, this is the sound that's in my head when Paul turns on the hot dog machine. So there might be some digestive issues. You could argue it's not ladylike.
It is a hot dog.
But this is America's favorite couple. And when he's a Met, it's going to be even more impressive. No? No takers on that?
Oh, I would love him on the Mets. Just if he's on the Mets, I'll tell you this. Lay off the hot dogs, all right? We don't need that. Save your heart. We don't need the, you know, the nitroglycerin and all that other garbage.
I mean,
the dude's
24 years old. He's a giant of a man. He seems to be a pitching machine. He's out there working with, like, tubes of water and weight vests. He can have a hot dog or six. He'll be okay.
And that's the concern with the machine, though. It's in your house 24/7. There's no escape. You know, you got to go to the convenience store or a ball game to get a hot dog. Here, it's just you plug it in. That's every day.
My neighbor, who I love, who has a huge 4th of July party, pulls out, like, an old school, like, Nathan's, that, like, two-part metal machine where part is the boiling water, and the next part you can put, like, sauerkraut. It's my favorite thing in the entire world. It's my favorite part of this huge 4th of July party. Is that machine is up and firing. You can smell the delicious dirty water hot dogs. Whenever you want one, they're just sitting there waiting for you. It's great. So I'm very jealous of that and the Paul Skeens machine. Good for him. What an offseason. All right, we're halfway through this Thursday edition of Writer Than You. It's Bogish in for Bill. Evan Washburn joins us. We'll spin around the NFL. He's got Brown Steelers this weekend. There are a few things to discuss about that game. Plus, he just saw the Ravens last weekend as well. There are questions about them, too. We'll do all of that, plus buy or sell, and get you set for Thursday Night Football. All in hour number two, Writer Than You, right here on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
And welcome back to the show on this Thursday morning here on the Infinity Sports Network on the free Odyssey app on SiriusXM, channel 375. However you are listening, thank you for doing so. I'm Andrew Bogish, in for Bill Ryder on this Thursday. Second hour of the show always begins on the guest line. One of the best we could talk to right now, have another busy NFL weekend, is Evan Washburn of CBS Sports. He and Ian Eagle and J.J. Watt have the Browns and Steelers, I believe, this Sunday. Evan, it's Andrew. Great to talk again, man. How are you?
I'm good, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Maybe the most important question I'm going to ask you this week, what's it like to no longer have the best hair on this crew? What's with JJ's hair going on these days?
Is that official? Did I miss the vote? Yeah, I didn't see the vote. No, I think that's you.
Okay.
Making a pretty strong opinion. No, man, it's awesome. Yeah, whatever he's doing with his lettuce. Is on him. He's got a long way to go to catch me, though. That's for sure.
That's true. That's very true. Now, and I will say this, and it's a weird thing for you to respond to. I get that, but I know from a much lower level than professional football games on network TV, it's hard to create chemistry with a new group. But you guys have hit the ground running. What do you think is the reason why you guys are having so much fun on Sundays?
Well, I think it starts with we like each other and we get along off the air. There was a little bit of a built-in knowledge of one another, both from covering JJ when he was a player, Ian for more years than me, and then JJ's been around CBS for a number of years in his role with NFL Today, so we'd catch up on the road, big playoff games, things like that. But I think at the core of it, we like each other and we're all in it for everybody to look good. We know that if everybody looks good, if the other one looks good, then we all look good. So I think if you go at it with that premise, chemistry can come along pretty quick.
Just don't mess with your hair is the moral of this story, though.
There you go, man. I mean, we all have our roles. Yeah. And play a role.
So again, you've got Browns Steelers this weekend. You're coming off Texans and Ravens, and that's where I wanted to start. So I also think that you're around the Ravens a lot in the summer. So tell me, do you think after this 1-4 start, all these injuries, can this season be salvaged?
Man, we're trickling into dangerous territory based off of the schedule. I think the saving grace, if you will, is their division.
Right.
Depending on how things go with Pittsburgh over the next few weeks here, if they start to run away with it, then that's no longer a saving grace. But it would look to be a down year for the AFC North. So this could be one of those seasons where 9-8 wins the division. And I do think that that's achievable for Baltimore. If they get healthy, they get right, they figure out what they're doing defensively, find some consistency on that side of the ball, change the energy in and around the team. And I think that those things can happen. But outside of that, this is just one of those, I think people call it kind of like the miserable year, or where everything seems to go wrong. And Baltimore, at least out of the gate, is having one of those.
So let's assume for a second that things don't change, and this is just that long, miserable, bad year. Can you envision in December/January an actual conversation about a coaching change in Baltimore, or is John Harbaugh safe no matter how this plays out?
Well, I mean, I don't have that answer. I would just go off of previous scenarios, situations, the way that organization operates. And it's been one of the most consistent, well-run for a long time under the direction, most notably Steve Bisciotti, but Eric DaCosta, Ozzie Newsome, and John. So I would say they are more on the side, similar to Pittsburgh, where it's being patient and understanding circumstance as to why things happen. Why did things go haywire this year? And that, I think, would be kind of the first step before any major changes would be made. And it's still so early.
Yeah. Evan, as we move ahead now to this weekend, and it's Browns and Steelers, would Shedeur Sanders come up in your production meetings before Sunday with the Browns side?
I don't know. I would think only if we still don't know by Saturday afternoon when we meet with him, if he's going to be the backup. I mean, I think you want to know who's backing up the starting quarterback so that you can be prepared to talk about that person if they have to go in based off an injury or poor play. So outside of that, I think it wouldn't be a huge topic.
The starting quarterback, we know that. It's Dylan Gabriel. It's only one game. But what were your takeaways from his debut, and what do you think it might mean for them offensively, improvement-wise, moving forward?
Well, he doesn't look overwhelmed, so that's good. He played a ton of college football, obviously. He definitely, it looked like a game plan that was meant to protect a quarterback making his first start. I don't know if the location, it being in London, had anything to do with it. But you see this sometimes with rookie quarterbacks. I can think back to meetings. I think it was in Chicago with Mitch Trubisky, and John Fox was saying, as long as we're ending every possession in a kick, we're good. I'm kind of thinking, all right, well, this is not going to be a cut-it-loose, entertaining game.
Yeah.
And that's a reality sometimes with these young quarterbacks, and I get that. So I think the next step for Dylan Gabriel, maybe it's not this weekend, because just looking at the surface, I mean, man, you're starting in London, in a unique environment, experience, and then start number two, hey, go to Pittsburgh and play in one of the most challenging environments against a defense that seemed to have figured it out, and that's tough. So I don't think necessarily they're going to let the training wheels completely off the offense and Gabriel this week, but I think that's probably what you're getting to is, all right, how do we start to get Jerry Jeudy involved? How do we start to stretch the field, if we can, with this offense led by a rookie in Dylan Gabriel?
Can you think of a more unpredictable, wild, crazy, confusing quarterback situation? I mean, even going back to drafting these two guys and then trading Kenny Pickett and then making the switch and then out of nowhere now trading Flacco as well?
No, it's definitely up there. And the I would say, entertaining story, drama filled. I mean, it hasn't been overly dramatic, but yes, to your point, I think the only other one that comes up that I think people have talked about a bunch are RG3 and Kirk Cousins, but they're both drafted same draft class. RG3 is a rocket ship out of the gate, and then things go south after some injuries, and then Kirk kind of steps in, and then there was that year of awkwardness where they're both on the same roster. But the Flacco thing, and then Deshaun obviously still involved in some capacity, those two, to me, make it more unique than just two rookies, same draft class, competing against each other.
This is Evan Washburn of CBS Sports with us this morning here on Writer Than You. Again, Browns and Steelers is his assignment this weekend. As far as the Steelers go, you mentioned them quickly so far this morning, but kind of longer form here on where you put them amongst the best teams in the AFC through these first 5 weeks of the season.
I mean, I think they're up there. I think that what's been stunning in a fun way about the start of the year is the teams that myself included kind of had pegged as the top three, that being Buffalo, Kansas City, and Baltimore, have all shown vulnerability. Kansas City and Baltimore probably top among that list. Buffalo losing to New England kind of showed they have some warts as well. But the Jacksonville thing, I don't think many of us saw coming. And so for Pittsburgh, they're right in that mix of, all right, they're in our conversation for top teams in the AFC until proven otherwise, or till I think we're going to probably see, Andrew, over the next, week six, next 3 weeks, that we'll start to see, much like in a horse race or a race car situation, where like there's going to be a group that's going to somewhat separate themselves, but it's kind of all jumbled up right now in that, you know, just above the middle of the pack to the top.
You know, and Evan, one of, I think, the overriding theories of why teams don't start well, maybe they don't meet projections right away, is the different kind of training camp summer setup we have now, that September is almost like extended training camp to a certain extent. Do you put a lot of stock in that argument, trying to explain why some teams don't come out of the gates like we think they're going to?
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of the conversation, especially when you talk about offensive line play and maybe defensive line to some degree, but really it's the offensive lineman. I mean, for them to practice what they need to do in a game, which is where things matter and their consequences, they need to be in full pads, going full speed, doing all the blocking techniques and all those things. They can't do that for a majority of training camp or really the season. So majority of their time on task comes in a game. So if you start there, Pittsburgh's a good example. They run about as physical a training camp as you will find, and they've started strong most years. But the flip side of that is that they've had some years, most notably last year, where they tail off. Is that a factor of they peaked too early because they were coming out of training camp in great football shape, but now they start to wear down because they went? That's where you kind of continue to play whatever you believe, whatever opinion you have, you can find the data and the evidence to back it up. I believe there's somewhere in the middle where teams should be able to practice, or players should be able to practice as much as they want. I think there's, and this is where if you say that, then coaches will just basically make things voluntary, but punish people if they don't show up. So again, it becomes a real gray area situation. But the times where you hear situations where a guy, especially like a young quarterback, wants to get reps or wants to spend time with his coaches in the off season and do these things and can't because it's not an official practice, all that, that seems kind of crazy. I mean, they're like the pros. They should be able to do as much stuff with their team, in pads, helmet, whatever they want to do, as they feel necessary to be primed and ready when the season starts.
Yeah, that's a good point. We love those stories when like a quarterback organizes the workouts in California or Arizona or Florida, and they're showing
that's
leadership.
Team building, though, that's bonding. That's relationship. I don't really buy that. That's like really getting them to some level of performance and chemistry in literal like route running situations when they go, you know, have a blast at Cabo for 3 days. Like that's a good hang, and I think it's great, and I think it's cool. I'm thinking more these young quarterbacks, especially backups. I mean, this is what you're seeing in Cincinnati. Jake Browning, who actually proved the against the rule in his previous time stepping in for Joe Burrow 2 seasons ago, but like Jake Browning could be a capable player, but he hasn't really touched a live rep since he was starting 2 years ago. That's tough. It's tough for any of us to do anything if we're not actually doing the job you need us to do, and then you throw us in a game against the best to do it.
Yeah, and I was only bringing up those like kind of offsite workouts because they happen when you can't be at the facility, right?
Sure.
So like you can do team building stuff all you want, but it would, like if those were real practice, like you were saying, they might be more helpful to the actual football product.
No doubt. And I mean, I think the response I would get or we would get, most players would rather not be in the building.
Yeah,
the
that's
office.
True.
And I get that too. So it's a fun discussion to have. I'm not sure that the cleanest answer, because the old school way obviously wasn't great for the player's health, and that is most important. But we do have to manage through a product, and maybe that's it. It's just, all right, suck it up. Deal with somewhat choppy football for 4 to 6 weeks that you still watch. We all love watching it. I'm enjoying it. And then we get more of a primed product in the middle of October.
To go back to the Steelers real quick here, they're 3-1 going into this game on Sunday. They scored a bunch of points in that first game against the Jets, but in their last two wins, they just crossed 20 points. Haven't had a huge, at least yardage game yet from Aaron Rodgers. Do you think there's much more room to grow for that offense, or is this kind of what Pittsburgh is going to be with him as their quarterback all season long?
No, it's a great question. I've thought about it a lot this week because we've had this will be our third Steelers game in 6 weeks, which is, I mean, even for us, we do a lot of Steelers games. I love it, but it's a lot. We've seen them every step of the way. I think what I saw in Dublin is the best version of this team just in general. It wasn't perfect by any means, but they ran the ball really well. Kenneth Gainwell was awesome. They figured out how to get DK going based largely off of the ability to run, bring safeties down. The basic stuff that you and I can talk about in terms of scheme. And they played really good defense, and they made things tough for an offense, albeit Carson Wentz, that has the potential to score with Justin Jefferson. So I just think, and this is what I've been saying all offseason, like Aaron Rodgers came here to be a calming presence at the position, not to be MVP Rodgers throwing for 300-plus yards a game. I think the best version of Pittsburgh offensively, that they do win games in the mid-20s, and they're holding teams to 14-17, and they're playing clean football. And, yeah, Aaron's making a couple wow throws a game, and he's getting DK going. But that, to me, is the formula for consistent success and, most importantly, for Steelers fans, a playoff win.
Evan, last question. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but it just popped into my head, and only because you've been around him much, much more than I have. Is there any what's your reaction to all of this Bill Belichick news at North Carolina, either over the last 24 hours or over the entirety of his tenure at North Carolina so far?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question. It's definitely, it's interesting to consume from the outside, but it's so out of my depth right now that it's just not something I can really get into because I just don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it seemed like an exciting opportunity out of the gate and maybe things will turn around. But yeah, right now it seems, at least as I'm consuming the coverage the same as you are, that's not the case. So that's about as much as I'm kind of comfortable opining about because I'm just so ill-informed on it.
Yeah, I appreciate the answer. It would have bothered me not to ask, so I appreciate you for your answer at all. And thank you, as always, for checking in today. We appreciate it. Have a good call this week, and hopefully we'll get you again down the road this season.
Yeah, man. Always fun to talk. See ya.
See, that's Evan Washburn, CBS. It's him and Ian Eagle and J.J. Watt this weekend. It's Browns and Steelers. It's a little bit of an odd NFL Sunday. Now, the joke around here in New York was because the Giants are playing tonight and then the Jets have the early Sunday game in London, it was almost like, hey, if your girlfriend, your wife, your partner, if you want to look like a good dude for a minute and be like, hey, you know what? This Sunday, let's do anything you want to do. Do you want to go here? Do you want to go there? I need to clean this. Should I get to that honey-do list? Like, this Sunday after, like, make yourself look like you're a saint. Like, here's an NFL Sunday. That's for you, honey. Because with the two local teams not in the afternoon window, there's really nothing going on. Like, it's a Browns-Steelers is a good-ish game because we've got questions to answer about Pittsburgh. And, Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur Sanders, and we'll get more to them before the show is over. I mean, there's always going to be intrigue there. But, Seattle-Jacksonville out of nowhere is an important game. You've got, Indianapolis and Arizona. That's a Colts-specific thing. As I look at Hickey again, flexing. Chargers and Miami could have been a good game, but the Chargers are so beat up on the offensive line. The Dolphins may be on their last moments with their head coach and their GM. Dallas at Carolina, and then in the late window Sunday afternoon, the Packers host the ghost of the Bengals, but I guess that's a Joe Flacco performance now, so that game has a little more juice than it did when the week began. Obviously, Lions-Chiefs is a good game Sunday night. Niners-Bucks is a decent game Sunday afternoon, but it's not the heavy hitter lineup we get sometime. And I think in comparison to the college football schedule, Saturday's better than Sunday, I think, top to bottom when it comes to your football viewing pleasure. So again, if you're looking to be a good dude for a minute, and you want to, if you've been waiting and protecting your Sunday afternoons, maybe this is the one that you take that trip to the Apple Pickin' or clean out the garage because there's not much that demands your attention this Sunday afternoon. That being said, one of the better ones is Browns and Steelers. So thanks again to Evan for jumping on with us this morning. When we come back, it's buy or sell. Then more from the NFL, the Browns, Eagles, and Giants tonight. A lot to do, as usual, before noon Eastern right here, Writer Than You, on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
When he first got the job and he gave that funny press conference and he said he wanted to have his players bite off kneecaps, he did everything but growl, ruff, ruff, or whatever it sounds like when you bite off a kneecap.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Dan Campbell was right, by the way. That's worked out well, huh? That all spooked me. I thought that was going to flame out in a hurry. Meanwhile, they're one of the best teams, and he's one of the best coaches in the NFL. He's not Bill Belichick at North Carolina. It's Andrew Bogish in for Bill Ryder on this Thursday. I'm assuming Bill Belichick will come up during buy or sell, which is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam, just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
Bogues, you assumed correct.
Maybe because I have the script in front of me.
Or just great foresight. No one truly knows. But you do talk Bill Belichick, Andrew. According to Tar Heel 24/7, Bill has already begun buyout discussions with UNC just 5 games into the season. Now, this week, UNC suspended an assistant coach after he provided impermissible benefits, or reportedly other violations have occurred as well. Now, both Belichick and the athletic department released statements affirming their commitment to each other yesterday. UNC currently on their final bye this season. They play Cal next Friday night.
Bye in a conference game.
Across the country in a conference game. Ugh. Buy or sell. Bill Belichick will coach all 12 games for the Tar Heels this season.
I'm going to buy he'll coach all 12 games. But those might be the only 12 games that he is going to coach in North Carolina. This is where we began the show this morning, because the last not even 24 hours have been bat you know what crazy in North Carolina, with multiple different outlets reporting how bad things are and that both sides are considering some kind of divorce. And then we get the very awkward vote of confidence from leadership last night, plus Bill saying, "I'm committed to being North Carolina's head coach." I believe he's committed for now, but this seems to be so out of control. And from where I sit, again, unchangeable. He's not going to do this differently. He's not going to think, oh, I need to be Mr. Nice Guy now. He's not going to be baking cookies or shaking hands, kissing babies. He's going to be aloof. He's going to be grouchy. He's going to wear stupid-looking clothes with cut-off sleeves. He's going to have the girlfriend on the sideline. This is what it's going to be. And it's just not sustainable. So he'll finish this season, I think, just to avoid the embarrassment of kind of quitting. But this, they will not stay together for year number two.
A quick bonus, buy or sell. Is there any chance they're playing a 13th game and become bowl eligible? Buy or sell that they will be a bowl eligible team.
So they're 2-3 right now. They haven't come close to beating a Power 4 school yet. I'm going to say no.
Sell.
Yeah, sell. That's the right way.
Maybe, Bogues, the reason why things are not going well at UNC is because Bill Belichick, ever since Tom Brady left New England, well, he struggled to win. Going back to his time with the Patriots, the final 4 years he was in Foxborough, 3 of them were losing seasons, did not win a playoff game in any of those final 4 years, hasn't won a playoff game since beating the Rams in the Super Bowl in the 2018 season, and now we see him in real time here flaming out at North Carolina. Buy or sell, these last few years have you rethinking whether Bill Belichick is truly the GOAT?
I'll sell that.
Sell.
It has made me rethink the kind of credit balance, the power balance between him and Tom Brady. But I lived through all of this. And as you might have heard during our Yankee Elimination Day celebration back in hour number one, I'm a pretty petty guy. Like, I enjoy other people's sports pain. And I have a lot of connections, a lot of friends, a lot of coworkers that are Patriot fans. So few and far between, but I like when the Patriots lose. I had enough of Brady and company. The fact that my Giants beat them twice is a thing that I will take to the grave with me as a compliment and on the resume. But I lived all of that as an adult. Like, is this not? Oh, I remember this. Like, I lived the Patriots. I worked in this industry professionally while they were in the middle of doing all of this. I know that Bill Belichick is not a dope. Bill Belichick, two things can be true here, and I think they are true. Bill Belichick is still the greatest head coach of all time, or could be the greatest head coach of all time, but had less responsibility than Tom Brady for the Patriots' success. Because you cannot dismiss game plans, defense, which Brady had nothing to do with it, getting guys ready. For a long time, the shtick was right. The shtick worked of, we're on to the next game. Next game matters. Nobody knows anything. Secrets stay inside. All of that stuff happened. Plus what Belichick did running the Giants as their defensive coordinator. So I can't take away all of that stuff, but I can wonder where his impact ended and Brady's began, all considered across the dynasty that was the New England Patriots. But it'd be unfair to rewrite all the history based on what's going on at the end of the Patriots with him and now North Carolina.
Let's go from a couple negatives to a positive, folks. Mm-hmm. As we look at Buccaneers quarterback Baker Mayfield, he's been outstanding so far this season as he's top five in the league in terms of passing yards and passing touchdowns, while ranking top 10 among quarterbacks in passer rating. Mayfield already has four game-winning fourth-quarter drives, and Tampa Bay has scored at least 20 points in 20 straight games going back to last year, which is the longest current streak in the NFL. Buy or sell, Baker Mayfield is your MVP frontrunner.
Yeah, I'm going to buy that.
Buy.
Because when you look around at the other good teams, Josh Allen has been fine, but not super-duper dynamic Josh Allen yet for Buffalo. I don't think that there is a MVP candidate yet for the Steelers, the first-place team in the AFC North. I guess Daniel Jones deserves to get some MVP votes for the 4-1 Indianapolis Colts. The Chiefs at 2-3 can't make a Patrick Mahomes case just yet for MVP. The Eagles have their issues at the moment. Now, maybe Jalen Hurts establishes himself as their candidate for this. In Detroit, we can talk about Jared Goff. That's fine. But the best story for me right now through these first 5 weeks is the way the Bucs play and the way the Bucs win. Now, I will say this. Stop doing this. You cannot win every week by scoring at the last possible moment. You might want to get ahead and stay ahead. But Baker is too fun to watch and too productive to dismiss. So he is definitely, if you had to vote today, you'd have to vote for him.
Week 6 kicks off tonight as the Eagles take on the Giants as Philly looks to get their offense back on track for the first time this season. The passing attack for Philly has gotten a lot of the attention as they own the 31st ranked passing offense, but they've been able to run the ball consistently either, Bogues, leading to their overall offensive ranking being 30th when it comes to yards per game. On the flip side, Giants come into tonight's game ranked in the bottom third defensively in every category. Buy or sell, the Eagles will score at least 30 points tonight.
We'll buy this.
Buy.
I don't think it will alleviate all concerns, erase all doubts, but this is a pretty good matchup for the Eagles on a short week. Facing this Giant team, as you said, that gives up points, it gives up yards, doesn't matter, on the ground, through the air. The Saints had long touchdowns last week. Spencer Rattler hadn't won a game yet as a starter, and they beat the Giants last week. I can still remember Dak Prescott throwing for a bazillion yards in that Cowboy game. There's production out there. They better get to 30. If they don't get to 30, if they continue to have issues, you're going to have a very different conversation tomorrow. I'll give the Eagles some leash here today, but 24 hours from now, if they still stink offensively after seeing the Giants last night, then maybe the panic should start to set in Philly.
Let's finish by ourselves, folks, with a few baseball questions, as yesterday, after keeping their seasons alive, both the Cubs and Phillies look to force Game 5 with wins later today. Chicago is slated to throw Matthew Boyd, who did start Game 1 for them, but only lasted two-thirds of an inning.
Whoops.
Got absolutely rocked in that one, where the Phillies had their ace in Christopher Sanchez on the bump, who allowed two runs while striking out eight Dodgers in Game number 1. Buy or sell, either the Cubs or Phillies will win and force a Game 5.
So I'll buy that one of them is going to win their respective Game 4. And I'll go a step farther for you, Hickey. I'm going to tell you that the Phillies are going to be the ones that force a Game 5. Now, the Brewers, to me, are going to do what the Blue Jays did last night. Is, you know, they've got the kind of backstop of Game 5 back in our building, no big deal, but they want to get this over with as soon as possible. And I have a feeling that they're going to get that done at Wrigley. The Phillies have the pitching advantage in this one. They're throwing their new ace without Zach Wheeler, Christopher Sanchez. It's Tyler Glass now and this kind of shaky Dodger bullpen. And I think that Kyle Schwarber woke up last night. So I think the Phillies get this series back to Philly. God forbid that happens, because we, coming off the Yankee elimination, we don't need a Philly rally. The Dodgers can't let us down here. But I think they're going to have to win this series in a game five in Philadelphia.
Which, you know, going back to Philly, maybe actually the Phillies' worst case scenario.
Maybe.
Can't win at home.
Nope.
Intimidated by their own fans. As you just mentioned, the Blue Jays don't have to worry about going back home for a game five, because last night they beat the Yankees and now advance their first ALCS since 2016 as they won 5-2 in the Bronx. Toronto will have home field no matter who wins game five tomorrow between the Mariners and Tigers. And you look at their home record at 54-27, the Blue Jays have the best home record in the AL. Buy or sell. The Blue Jays are your pick, Bogues, to make the World Series out of the AL.
This has become a tough one. I'm going to sell it.
Sell.
Now, from the heart, they have my support for knocking the Yankees out. But if I'm doing this just from a baseball perspective, I kind of like the Mariners all along here. And even though they let game four with the Tigers get away from, or game three, excuse me, no, it was game four, get away from them, I still like their rotation. I still like their bullpen. And I still like their lineup anchored by Raleigh and Rodriguez and Suarez. So I think over seven games, even with four of those potentially being in Toronto, I think the Mariners have a little more length in those three areas to survive the Blue Jays. But if we get it, it'll be a heck of a series either way.
Good way to end, I think.
So again, this is the Blue Jays. I gotcha. I'm not rooting for you in this next round. Just looking from as objectively as possible with my tiny baseball brain, if the Mariners get there. Now, the other part of that, too, is they can't line up their pitching and all that kind of stuff, so that might hurt them, but I still think they might be the better team top to bottom. Before we're done, I don't want to do it, but I have to do it again. They don't deserve it, at least. But the Browns, I will come to your defense with your very, very peculiar quarterback situation. Plus, more on that Eagles and Giants Thursday night game before we are done. But first things first, it is update time, and here is Gordon Damer.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
Andrew, they're one win away from getting their division series back to Philadelphia. Phillies try to stave off elimination again today. They'll go up against the Dodgers, game four of their NLDS. After putting up nine runs combined in the first two games against L.A., Phil scored eight runs last night, including a couple of home runs from Kyle Schwarber.
We know what's at stake, right? There's no doubt about it, but we take it a day at a time, and we know what we have in our room, and if we keep doing what we do on a daily basis, consistent basis, good things are going to happen.
Christopher Sanchez, Tyler Glass now hook up on the mound. Then there's the Cubs and Brewers, game four at Wrigley. Milwaukee going for the clincher again. Cubs have scored eight of their 10 runs in the first inning in this series.
I'm going to tell our guys it's the first inning every inning tomorrow. I think that's our best formula right now offensively.
Mariners, Tigers set for their game five tomorrow. NFL week six kicks off tonight. Giants and Eagles. From MetLife, Giants have lost eight straight division games, the longest streak currently in the NFL. I'm Gordon Damer.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
Nearing the finish line on this Thursday morning here on Writer Than You, Andrew Bogish in for Bill, who is enjoying the week off. If you follow Bill on social media, you have seen him and his beautiful wife having a great time in Paris for their 20th wedding anniversary. Mine's coming up soon. 2 years from now is 20 for me. So luckily my wife does not follow Bill or Mrs. Ryder on social media as far as I know. So I don't think she sees how wonderful their trip is and any ideas for what I have to plan for 2 years from now. But for now, all I'll say is that Bill and I are both old and lucky. Lucky in love. Hickey's almost married. As far as I know, that's still a thing. So, you know, you've got, how long have you been with your now fiance?
We will celebrate 8 years together at the end of the month.
8 years?
Yeah.
Wow. Good for you guys. Yeah, I've been with my wife for 25 years now and married for 17. 18. 18.
So we're about 18. Get that number right.
Yes. 18. That's math. As I said, going to break, they don't deserve it. But I'm going to defend the Cleveland Browns here over our final few minutes, a portion of the show that is sponsored by the all-new Hyundai Palisade Hybrid. Learn how it's so much more than just another SUV at HyundaiUSA.com. They've done nothing to deserve this. They have created a situation that they now live in which I'm going to defend them. But I to a certain extent, I understand where the other side of this is coming from. But at some point, it goes too far. It's too blind. It's too loyal. It's too unwarranted. And that is reading anything and everything into every quarterback decision the Browns make as a slight to Shedeur Sanders. And the latest one is now the trading of Joe Flacco out of nowhere this week. It sounded like Kevin Stefanski was telling us that even he didn't know that was coming. And then all of a sudden, Andrew Berry, their GM, called and was like, Joe's going to Cincinnati. So now they're left with the two rookies, Shedeur and Dylan Gabriel, plus Bailey Zappe, who they had kind of, who was there as the supreme safety net. Now, this again started, I guess, this confusion, whatever, insults, hurt feelings over the depth chart. It goes back to the beginning, to the summer, where they refused to keep moving Shedeur up. He had one preseason game, a good one, and everyone wanted him to be the starter. Then he had one bad one. That didn't matter. But it was as he was left at number four, it was a slight to Shedeur. Then they trade Kenny Pickett, so now he's number three behind Dylan Gabriel. And then they make the switch from Flacco to Gabriel, and they leave Shedeur at number three with Flacco now the backup, and everyone freaks out again. Why are they doing this? Why don't they like him? Why do they hate him? He deserves this. He deserves that. He should be the backup. And now this week, they trade Joe Flacco, and we get Kevin Stefanski saying, I don't know yet who's going to be the backup for Sunday. Obviously, maybe it's going to be Zappe. Maybe it's going to be Shedeur Sanders. And now here is the coach explaining why yesterday he couldn't commit to promoting Shedeur to that number two spot.
Again, I wouldn't say there's one thing you need to see. I just, in my role, I have to do what's best for our players, our team. And I'm very, very invested in our player development, our young players' development, our quarterback development. So any decision I make, I want to just make sure that I'm doing what's right for our players.
I know they're the Browns. I know that they've had, is it 42 quarterbacks with Gabriel since they came back into the league in 99? I know they are the ones that gave Deshaun Watson a ludicrous, fully guaranteed contract. They're the Browns. They're idiots. They don't necessarily deserve a benefit of the doubt or our trust in them, but I once again find myself trusting them here. Now, they may be using faulty, incorrect football logic, but I still feel comfortable sitting here telling you that these decisions about Gabriel, about Shedeur, about the depth chart are actually football decisions. There is no conspiracy theory here. This is not about whether they like anybody or don't like somebody. I still don't know why they're both there. We might never know where the call came from. Maybe inside the house to draft Shedeur after taking Dylan Gabriel two rounds earlier. We may never have that answer. But as we've moved through all of this, and everyone's, they said it was an open competition. They did this. They said that. We've said all of these things, either pro or against them, blindly. I guess I'm no different than you if you're a tried and true Shedeur supporter here and you think he's just being wronged at every turn by this organization. But I think the proof is what they actually do when it matters. The other side is assuming that Shedeur is carving things up at practice and doing all this great stuff and he should move up, he should move up, he should move up, he should start. And we're not in the meetings. We're not in the huddles. We don't know where he is. Going back to the draft process, whether you loved him, liked him, didn't like him, I think everybody agreed that he was far from a finished product and would have been better served not being anybody's starting quarterback from day one. He needed some seasoning, needed some maturation as a pro quarterback, not necessarily about as a person, leader, whatever, just like he needed time to learn. And as they gave him this time to learn, then we got angry that he was giving time to learn. And again, not being in meetings, not being in huddles, not really being at every single practice, we don't know how he's playing until they tell us how he's playing by leaving him where they did at different times on the depth chart. They gave us our answer. Everyone was looking for proof, and then they gave it to us, and they ignored it. When they have left him at 4, at 3, that was telling you where he deserved to be. It wasn't about, again, conspiracies, personal vendettas, disliking the person, whatever. It was just about football. That's how it lined up when it came to football. And now we get to this week, and I said something similar last week as well, when he wasn't made the backup. When you take Flacco out of number one, he doesn't have to go to the back of the line, and then everybody else moves up a spot. And we have definitely seen this before. This happens a lot of times based on whether it's a rookie quarterback or maybe a quarterback that plays the game differently than the starter, whether the starter is, you know, a running athletic quarterback or he's, you know, a standing still back there with no athleticism and the other guy's the opposite. It's hard to make the opposite guy the backup because he doesn't fit the game plan. He doesn't play the way the other guy plays, and that's a big ask for everybody in game to make a change. Now, Ian Rappaport tweeted this out and wrote about this last week, but it still holds true today. The Browns want Shador to be successful when he's out there. I believe that. They're not sabotaging him. When he plays, they want him to do so with a game plan that's made for him to thrive. As the backup, if he was forced into action, he'd be running a game plan built for Dylan Gabriel rather than one built to his strengths. That's why last week Joe Flacco was the backup. Because the Browns actually, not being conspiracy theorists, not being mean to Shador, they were actually taking care of him. Because putting him in, let's say Dylan Gabriel gets hurt in that game. And now you put Shador in that game off the sideline cold, he's not going to play well. Almost no one would play well in that situation. Any rookie quarterback that wasn't a top-tier, knockdown, dead-on prospect, and even those guys might have walked into that game out of nowhere and been awful. Eli Manning was terrible the first times he got on the field as a Giant. I remember working with Amani Toomer, Giant wide receiver at that time, and he told me one time that the Ravens were openly mocking Eli at the line of scrimmage to his face over Giant offensive linemen because Eli was so frazzled and couldn't identify the Mike linebacker and looked scared to death at the line of scrimmage. I don't know if Shador would have been that bad, but to put him on the field unprepared is actually not good for him. This makes perfect sense, what Rappaport wrote. And it's what I believed last week, and it's what I believe right now when Kevin Stefanski says, I don't know who the backup is going to be, because Bailey Zappe knows how to do this. Bailey Zappe knows how to get ready for a game without practicing. He knows how to get ready for a game by just studying or taking mental reps. And then he knows how to come into a game and not get killed, take some beatings, and maybe make a play or two if you had to, in the moment, replace Dylan Gabriel. Leaving Shador Sanders at number 3 just to be Shador Sanders and still learn and still progress, this is actually the right thing to do. The assumption that he's the best quarterback in the moment in Cleveland is not an assumption you can make. He might be one day. He might not. He might be serviceable. He might outplay Dylan Gabriel. He might need to go somewhere else. But the idea blindly that he's being wronged here or that Stefanski is bungling his way through another decision, it's just not true. Many coaches, many teams have done this in similar situations with young quarterbacks or kind of different quarterbacks. You don't make them the backup because you don't want to throw them into the fire in the game without... I didn't even like what they did. I thought they were being more unfair to Dylan Gabriel last week than the Shador, making Gabriel start on a week where they were losing a practice because they were traveling to Europe to play the game. That wasn't fair to him. And now they're being fair to Shadur, because I do believe that they are trying, when he plays, they want him to be in the best possible scenario. And coming off the sideline cold in a game without reps is not what you want if you're begging for proof that Shadur can play. You want him to have maybe a bye week and then a practice week in a run-up to his first game. So he's got time to do all those things, all the prep work. And he's not going to get that as the backup quarterback. So let him sit at number three, let him learn, and if a chance arises later in the year for whatever reason and he has the right run-up, then be happy that he's out there and cross your fingers that it goes well so you have your proof that you've been right and that he's going to be good in the National Football League. The music means we're done. Huge thanks to Evan Washburn, to Ryan Hickey, to Gordon Damer, to Bill Ryder. Hickey's got you tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday, and as always, thank you for listening to Writer Than You on the Infinity Sports Network.